dwelling in the darkest depths of the mind. It's time for Mark D. Valenti and Brain Burrow.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark D. Valenti, and this is another episode of Brain Burrow. This is our digging deep session where we have an opportunity to really understand our guest, and they have a chance to really talk about their motivation, their feelings, their values, their strengths, their opportunities. And then you, the listener and viewer, have a chance to think, how does this apply to my life? I'm very pleased to have on the show today Ms. Lisa Wilcox, and I'm going to hand it over to her with the big open-ended question, who exactly is Lisa Wilcox?
Well, maybe an outsider could tell me who I am. That would probably be better. It's so hard to describe who you are. I mean, I don't know. I'm just a regular woman. Just a regular gal, basically. Yeah, I have I'm passionate about theater and performances, performers, all artists, whether you're a painter or a dancer. I have such admiration for artists and knowing the hard road that we chose to live, you know. So we're kind of masochistic, I guess. Anyway, you know, I'm a Midwestern girl. I grew up in Missouri. I have wonderful, had a wonderful growing up. We lived on a lake at times. I love the outdoors. I also love metropolitan living too. I don't know. I mean, it's such a odd, I don't know what to say. Well, I'm nice. I'm friendly. I'm outgoing. Yeah. Also grew up very much a daydreamer, completely absorbed in books. Sometimes I'd read 2 books a day just in my room. So I definitely like to be like isolated and in my own world, whether I'm watching a film or reading a book or at a museum or whatever. Yeah, I'm a mom and now grandma. So that adds a whole new level to life for sure. So.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And second of all, for someone who didn't really know what they were going to say, it seems like you have an awful lot to say about who you are.
Okay. It's just weird to talk about myself in that way. You know, I'm not comfortable with it. Like, I'm totally comfortable telling stories. I mean, every play, every TV show I've done, I have a story for every single one of those. I am a bit, I would say, a raconteur. I love telling stories and experiences that happened on set.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's something that ignites you in the way you can tell those stories. But I will say though, Lisa, I think, and by the way, especially for not knowing as much about the show, that's usually how people respond. And they're saying, I'm not used to talking about myself, or I don't want to talk about myself. So it's very much in line with that. But you've actually revealed an awful lot about yourself. And I want to talk about, when I first asked the question, you said that you're a regular person, like you kind of sort of downplayed who you are. So what's that about? What do you mean by regular?
Just down to earth, you know, no pretense whatsoever. I get along with anybody and everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I'm a little girl from Missouri who ended up having an acting career without any nepotism. It was simply about hard work and passion for the characters that I wanted that I got to create and that kind of thing. But yeah, I'm very approachable and all that kind of thing. It's just because it's interesting at conventions and I meet so many people, you know, and I understand them being nervous because believe me, if, you know, my favorite actor or actress was, you know, sitting there in front of me at a table, I'd be like, oh my gosh. And I've actually worked with actors where I was so nervous. I was terrified because I was such a big fan, you know, like Mark Hamill, for instance. I love Star Wars. Oh my gosh. And we played leads together in a movie called Watchers. And I'm telling you, the first screen, I couldn't sleep that night. I was so nervous, so excited too, of course. But anyway, it turns out he is just like the most regular, down-to-earth guy. He is such a sweetheart. So that's just like one example. So I can get the other side when people are meeting me because they love Alice or Utah from Star Trek or whatever. So I get it, guys. I'm the same person.
Yeah, that says a lot about your character, right? About being that down-to-earth person and your ability to express empathy toward fans who are in the same situation as you've been. So how
I just want to give them a hug and go, it's okay. I don't fight. Everything's cool. Just talk to me. Anyway, yeah.
That's right. No, I mean, I think that's a great point, right? You really are relating to what they're going through. So Lisa, given your popularity and, you know, and your desire to be down to earth and your humility, how do you balance those two things?
I don't understand the question.
Great question.
I don't balance it with what?
Yeah, because I mean, there's a certain level of stardom that you've achieved, right? You're well known, and which means that you could see yourself in different films. You see yourself out there. And to some people, that could make them lose their connectedness to their regularness, as you're saying, right? So how do you maintain your down-to-earth approach in spite of being out there everywhere?
I don't know how to answer that. I don't know. I'm just me, you know. Okay. I don't know how to answer. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. There's not a right or wrong answer.
It's not like I make a conscious decision, you know, conscious choice, like, oh, I'm at a convention now. And when I'm at my table, I need to be sure to be kind and empathetic to people. I mean, I don't like prepare myself for it. You know, I mean, I'm just, just being me.
So your strength in all of this is that you don't overthink it. You just do it.
Okay. I guess so. I've never even really thought about it, the balancing or anything. Never thought about it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Again, not right or wrong answers. This is the whole purpose of this show is to sort of dig a little bit beneath the surface and try to understand people's motivations. So thank you very much for going along with that.
I feel like I'm in therapy.
It sort of is like that in a way. So it's really about just understanding, because people like yourself are constantly answering questions about the films, and it's more about understanding the person behind it and what motivates them and giving you that space to be able to do that. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And my background is behavioral science. So that's probably why I thought like that. So good catch on that. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Well, because you've already said a lot of interesting things, and even just you saying you're not comfortable talking as much about yourself and you'd rather talk about the stories, right? So why is that? Why do you think that you're saying that you're not as comfortable talking about yourself?
Well, because a story is something where I'm like an experience I get to share that I want to share with the world. I want to share with people, and they get joy out of, you know, these experiences and realize that, you know, it may look like all, you know, perfect and all that, but all kinds of crazy stuff happens, good and bad, mostly good, mostly funny, mostly humorous. And I feel like too, it's being personable, you know, for someone to, you know, they kind of calm down. If I tell a story, then they're involved in the story instead of focused on me, you know? And it like mellows everyone out.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you've already, you know, again, it seems like you're really motivated to connect to people, to make people feel comfortable. And it sounds like the storytelling is just another way to do that.
Yeah, I would say so. Well, but
it's all from you. You're the one that said it. I'm just kind of rephrasing it. So, okay. So then I guess the next question is, why is it so important? Because there's lots of people out there who aren't as focused on making other people feel comfortable. And you've talked about it a couple different times already, which shows that it's really something you're passionate about. So why is that?
I think because I had a wonderful growing up with my family and whatnot, but we did move a lot. So every time we went to a new school, no, they already had their cliques, they already had their group. And I was very lonely. I would get very lonely, which is probably why I delved into characters and books and whatnot. So going through that growing up, being, you know, the last kid picked for the, you know, the kickball team at gym, or, you know, and just having that awkwardness and that loneliness and whatnot, and people not being friendly and people not engaging you, you know, like, you know, hey, you're the new kid in town, my name's Beth and blah, 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 blah. You know, there would be like maybe one or two people would do that, but out of, you know, a whole class of 40, no, they would judge you. They'd look at how you dressed, how you talked, what you wore. If you were, like, I was a good student, I liked to study because I was curious but you know, it was like, you got like the goody good thing, you know, going, you know, and I, right. So I remember one year, sixth grade, I decided that's it. I'm not going to be a goody-goody. I am going to fail my classes. And then this one school I went to, it was grade school. And my mom dressed up, me and my sister, we were like cute little tights and little skirts and, you know, what you would wear in fourth grade or fifth grade. No, this neighborhood was super wealthy and they were already wearing tight Levi's and I didn't own a pair of jeans, you know? And, you know, I just stood out as just an easy target, you know, and would have mud slapped on me on my white tights at gym or whatever. So being so humiliated and treated so awfully, I guess has become a big part of my life is to ingratiate people and make them feel wanted and needed and that they're interesting and that they have their own stories too, you know, that we're human, you know? Yeah. So it's no fun to be treated like that, believe me. So.
Right. I mean, that's beautiful.
And a lot of us have had that experience, you know, which we can all relate to.
Well, that's right. I mean, a lot of people have had that experience, but a lot of people don't try to heal others, right? A lot of people take it out in different ways. Sometimes people try to react to others and are bullying toward others as a way to deal with that energy. But you've chosen very mindfully to be able to use that energy and help, as you said, ingratiate others.
Yes. Yeah. To be bullied is the most horrible thing. And things that are happening now with the kids today with social media and Facebook and it's just, my heart just goes out to them because you know what, it's hard enough to grow up as our bodies are changing. And if you're having to adjust to new environments, moving or things going on in your family, just those elements alone, it's hard enough. And then to go through bullying at school on top of it, oh my gosh, it's rough.
Yeah. I mean, it can probably feel like we're out of control of what's going on out there.
Yeah. No empathy for humans, no empathy for your neighbor, you know, and it makes me sad actually. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think, and thank you, by the way, for sharing that. And it could probably feel overwhelming as you see all of this happening out there, as you see people bullied in social media, and as social media continues to grow and there's more, we're connected. So I guess the question is, how do you feel with that? How do you, not only how do you feel, but how do you deal with that sadness you've just identified that you feel?
Well, I, you know, I've thought of getting more involved in like bullying sites and that kind of thing. And I'm so busy, you know,
well, sure.
I haven't, but I also don't accept bullying. Like I get bullied even as an actress. I remember on Twitter, in general, I just would post pictures, you know, screenshots from Nightmare on Elm Street and that kind of thing. And then someone wrote like, you know, how come you just always only put pictures up from Nightmare on Elm Street? And I was like, delete. and actually I find Twitter much angrier and judgmental than my experience anyway, than Instagram or Facebook. Instagram I find to be actually the most freeing, friendly environment compared to Facebook and Twitter. In fact, I have a Twitter account, but I haven't checked it in 2 years. I don't even bother because I find the attitude disturbing. So I don't want it part of my life. I want to go to where a happier place,
right?
A supportive place,
right?
You know,
and that makes a lot of sense. And you know, Instagram, of course, is, to your point, does seem to be more positive and supportive. But there's a lesson here as well for anybody who might be listening, who's struggling with seeing posts on, you know, social media, feeling bullied as they look at that. What you strategized, what you did was you deleted a comment, you deleted that negativity.
And did not respond. Right. I'm not interest in defending myself to this stranger, you know, and don't waste your time. Don't waste your time with it, you know? That's my take.
No, that's a great lesson, right? And then you removed yourself from that area of Twitter as well. Same thing. So I'm wondering what advice might you give to people who are saying, oh, I can't help it. I got to keep looking, you know? So how have you been able to do it, remove yourself? And what advice might you give to somebody who's struggling with removing themselves?
I'd say, how does it make you feel? Is this engagement making you feel happy? Does it make you feel you're being constructive? How does it make you feel? And if it just bums you out and you're feeling you have to defend yourself all the time, you don't need to defend yourself. You are who you are. And the people that know you love you, you know, and you don't need to convince the entire world to love you, you know, and or to like you, you know. So that's what I'd say. That's what I am saying.
Sounds like not only a very succinct and powerful statement, but a very therapeutic statement. So thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
Now, I also want to commend you on being able to escape when you were a kid, you know, escape mentally from some of the stress. You know, you said daydreaming and reading. How did you, I mean, thinking back to your childhood, how did you even think about doing that? Because a lot of people, a lot of kids are there struggling and they don't know how to escape. They don't know what to do with all this angst and anger and frustration, but you were able to make a choice to daydream in a healthy way. I'm wondering, how did you ever find out how to do that?
I just, you know, some of, you know, it could have been, you know, it wasn't art for me. That's not what drew me in. But for someone who, art could be a way, a wonderful therapeutic thing, writing poetry or writing, sports. I'd say it's about investing yourself in something that just makes you smile, makes you glow. What made me thrilled was reading stories and imagining myself as those characters or being in that situation. And that's what thrilled me, you know, and I could get on a book and hours would go by and not even know. I'd go, oh my gosh, it's dinner time already, you know? So I'd say, find that passion, find that thing that makes the hours go by and you're not even looking at the clock.
Fantastic advice, right? It's finding your passion and being invested in it and really focusing on that and being okay with focusing on that.
Yeah. And try different things until you find it, you know?
Yeah.
It could be fishing. It could be several things, you know? I mean, there's gamers out there. I'm sure that's what makes them really, you know, happy and in a kind of happy place, you know? So anyway, to each his own, but just find it.
Well said. It's succinct, but yet again, powerful. So thank you for sharing that, Lisa. And as you look at your own motivation, let's just say day to day, I want to ask you, what gets you out of bed in the morning? I know it sounds like an interview question, but it really is about understanding your motivation and what drives you. It sounds like one of your drives is helping lift other people up. And I'm wondering what motivates you to continuously create, what motivates you to drive each day?
Okay. What really honestly gets me out of bed is food. Okay.
Okay.
I love food. And, you know, and I don't binge eat or anything like that, but, you know, I'll wake up and go, what am I have for breakfast? Am I going to make French toast? Oh, maybe I want eggs. Maybe. Okay. So honestly, it's a primal thing to get out of bed is to go into my kitchen and make something delicious. And as far as day to day, gosh, it's kind of cool as an actor because your email can have, you just booked a role. You are going to be doing a fabulous print modeling job and you're going to be doing it in, you know, France. You get invited to a convention in Australia. You know, so my motivation is definitely like, ooh, what yummy things are going to be? What's waiting for me today? You know, so that's a big motivation. You know, it's like, you know, the Easter egg, you know, just the delights, you know, and of course not every day is good news. You know, can certainly be disappointment too, but I think the big motivator is the positive things that are going to come my way, or a friend is going to come visit me, or, you know, so I live very much day, one day at a time for sure.
Yeah. And there's, again, a lot of positive, emotionally intelligent comments here, Lisa. I mean, you really seem to have a great balance. We're talking about balance of accepting the negatives with the positives, but focusing on the positives. Because there's a lot of people who say, I don't want to look at my email because I don't know what's going to be in there. So how do you not get drugged down by the potential negatives that could be in your email or that phone call or whatever? How are you able to sort of deal with it, but then move on to the positives?
I simply learned a long, long time ago, because you've got to have some thick skin to be an artist, because you're going to get a lot of rejection. And I learned a long time ago, that's one, and there's hundreds more coming, you know? So move on to the next. I might look at what could have I done differently. I will look at what could have I done differently. it for that audition or that a job interview or whatever, you know, and try to do, you know, a self examination of what I did well and what I didn't do well or what I can improve on, you know. And but then next. And it's very interesting too, because some of those things that have happened, like I remember this happened a couple times. I had an audition call back. It's between me and another gal, and they went with the other gal, and I'm really bummed because I, you know, really wanted to do this role, be on this show or whatever. And then like 3 or 4 days later, they've replaced, the actress didn't work out on set or whatever. And I get the call and to replace her.
Wow.
It's that wild. There's things that happened. Like there was a convention I really, that came up in my Instagram messages, and I was going through some family stuff, and I didn't check my Instagram messages for like 4 days. So then I had an opportunity to check, and it was offer for a show, a convention that I'd never done before and have wanted to do it forever. And there was the offer, and then there was, and then I'm like, oh yes, I'm available that weekend. I could do it. And they're like, we're sorry, we didn't hear from you. So we booked somebody else.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I was so disappointed. But anyway, instead I emailed them. I said, you know, I just said, well, hey, you know what? Things happen. And if someone, and this is something that's happening in just 3 weeks. So it was like a very last minute thing. Yeah. And I said, well, you know, if someone drops out, you know, just let you know, I'm happy to come join you all. I am available that weekend, et cetera. And guess what? They made room for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They're like, you know what? We really, really want you here, Lisa. So you know what? We're going to make it work. Right?
So it worked out.
So it's kind of like being positive, don't give up, you know, and some things just are just a dead end, move on. But sometimes that dead end will open up down the line. So
it's a wonderful message. Truly it is. Yeah. And even just in those two stories, it seems like it worked out.
Yeah.
Well,
and another thing that's happened too, I will say, is that like you didn't get it, you know, a role, right? But they liked your work, but they decided, we're going to keep her on our list. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could be a year later and I'm auditioning for the same producer or director for a role that they felt was better suited for me, you know? So you just don't know. You just don't know.
It's a really good point. And unless you try, you'll never know.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. So gotta knock on that door.
That's right. That's right. So actually I have less of a therapeutic type question. I have more of a philosophical question for you. So in the situations that you talked about with the convention or, you know, the situation where you kind of persevered and it worked out anyway, what do you attribute that to? There's some people that would say that it's just the way of the universe evening out, right? Which is more of an external locus of control. There's some people that would say that it's internal because you have positivity and you're imagining it and you're moving forward. There's some people that would say it's all just coincidence and random. So I'm wondering, what do you consider that, you know, the reasons why those worked out?
I don't think it's coincidence and random. I really don't. I think it's about keeping that flow of energy going. You know, if you don't get a job or whatever, you don't go and like bitch them out or anything. You know, it's like really, I mean, we can only control what we control, our actions. And we cannot, there's so little we can control, right? So I do kind of believe very much in a serendipity. I've had so much of that in my lifetime. So I think it's sort of a universal approach, you know, what comes around goes around, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and there's no point in worrying about it. There's no point. I mean, worry gets you absolutely nowhere. That I learned a long time ago too, you know, like I love that book. It's an old book, but don't sweat the small stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. And I would say as I have gotten older and matured, I live by many of the mottos in that book. Don't sweat the small stuff. It's a waste of time because your life goes so fast. It goes so fast. I can't believe I turned 57. I can't believe.
Wow. Congratulations on that as well, then.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, right? It's about, you know, you call them sweating the small stuff, cognitive distortions, where you become kind of wrapped up in your own mind. And to your point, if you're worried about getting a job or not getting a job, that doesn't impact the actual getting the job or not. So why bother to sweat the small
stuff? Exactly. Has no impact whatsoever. It's a waste.
Very well said. Yes. Yeah. And to be fair to you and you know, sort of give you an affirmation on this, there's a lot of people that struggle with that and cannot get out of their own heads, but you're able to do that. So, you know, as we're getting to almost the 30 minutes, I want to sort of get your take on how do you do that? Because as a human being, right, Lisa, even though you're very emotionally intelligent, you're able to assess why you're feeling about things, even though you may say you may not, you're able to assess your own reasons why you do things. How are you able to, whenever you find yourself starting to sweat the small stuff, how do you pull yourself back?
What I've done actually is sort of separated my brain from, like, if I'm worrying, I will tell my brain, because you get to tell your brain what you want to think. Okay. Yes. So if I'm worrying about something, I'll go, Lisa, think about something else. So I will distract myself with another thought. Now, in 30 seconds, my thoughts may go back to this worry that I'm having. Okay, Lisa, think of something else. You just have to get like in the habit of redirecting your thoughts, because you control your brain. You control what you're going to think. So I don't know, that's what I do, you know? And it's not always easy. Oh my gosh, it is definitely not always easy, but it's just sort of a remind yourself, okay, no, I don't, that's worrying, that don't go away. Go away from that. Let's go over here. So.
That was extremely insightful as well, because you brought up a really good point about habits. And, you know, there's a book called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. Mm. And it's really about, it talks about that, right? It talks about as human beings, we are constantly trying to make things habits so we don't have to think about it. And the example he brings up is, you know, when you sit in your car, you don't sit there and think, all right, I'm closing the door. I'm looking in the rearview mirror. I'm putting my seatbelt on. You don't do it. It's habit. And it's how we are able to save our psychological energy so we can focus on things that we need to pay attention to. But you brought up a really good point that, you know, you may very, very knowingly make the changes to tell your brain what to do, but over time it becomes habit. Mm. And I think that that's a pretty powerful statement as well. If people feel struggling, I can't get out of my own head, you're saying just do it and make it part of your habit.
Yeah. To create a new habit,
yeah,
create the habit, and habits are hard to break. They, you know, whether it's a physical habit, smoking or whatever, or a mental habit or whatever we have, it does, you know, it takes effort. It takes effort, but it's worth it. It's worth it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually, I think you may actually like that book, because that's exactly what he talks about in the book about it talks about the psychology of habits. So it sounds like that's right up your alley. Mm. You know, not that you have time to read.
Check that out.
Yes, exactly. And for the record, I'm getting no reimbursement by Charles Duhigg or anything. I just happen to want to talk about that book. So I just want to mention that just in case, right? As we end the discussion, I think I want to just ask one final question, which is, what do you want people to walk away with after listening to you or viewing you? What do you want people to walk away with regarding you? What do you want them to know about you after this interview?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Come meet me at a convention. I don't know. Come. I don't know. I want, you know, I feel for, you know, again, bullying and struggling with, you know, we have fears in our life, we have worry in our life, and it's about just try to read the book like you suggested. You know what I mean? You have to take action for change to happen. So take action is what I would encourage people to do. So.
That's wonderful. And for always sort of saying, I don't know how to respond to this, you seem to know exactly what to say. So thank you for sharing.
Very strange.
That's okay. We want people to walk away with, yes, this is strange, this is different versus this is the same old. So I want to thank you, Lisa, for appearing on the show today and kind of going on this journey with me and answering a lot of my off the wall questions.
Well, thank you. It felt uncomfortable, but it felt good too. You know, so thank you for letting me have the opportunity to share about myself, I guess. So yeah. Anyway, thank you.
You did a phenomenal job. And well, talking about ourselves and going outside of our comfort zone is meant to be by its very nature uncomfortable. So thank you for doing it.
No, and that's absolutely so true. Again, it's about making that effort or making try, which is awkward, uncomfortable, et cetera. But that's how we grow, right? That's
perfect. Another great message. So thank you, Lisa. And I want to thank the viewers and listeners out there who tuned in to Brain Burrow today. And on behalf of Lisa Wilcox, this is Mark DiValenti. Thank you and have a great day.
Bye. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
You just dug deep with Mark D. Do you want more? Follow Mark on Instagram at ValentiHorror and subscribe to the Brain Burrow podcast.